Welcome to the Free Cities Podcast. My name is Timothy Allen, and this is the official podcast of the Free Cities Foundation. Hello, and welcome to this episode number 132 of the Free Cities Podcast. Brought to you every week, as always, by Veritas Village, who are building off-grid, energy self-sufficient luxury homes in their freedom-oriented developments. Their latest project is Panama, and it's in the process of being built right now. You can own a piece of it. It's got a perfect climate for growing your own food, if that's your thing. And if not, well, every house comes with its own solar and or solar slash wind system included, because their goal for you is energy independence whilst maintaining a modern luxury lifestyle. Get in touch with them to see working models of their setups. www.ecovillages.life/podcast. The link's in the show notes. Please mention us when you have dealings with them. Now, back to the show. You've heard of Ross Ulbricht, right? If you're a Bitcoiner, you almost certainly have. If not, well, he became somewhat of a legend to many in 2015 after he was sentenced to double life in prison plus 40 years without the possibility of parole for running the dark web site Silk Road. If you don't know what that is, it was an online marketplace running on the Tor network. And it was a free market to sell pretty much anything, as you can imagine. A lot of drugs were sold there and various other things because it wasn't regulated. Bitcoin was the currency of choice for people using the Silk Road. And Ross was convicted of engaging in a continuing criminal enterprise of distributing narcotics by means of the internet, conspiracy to commit money laundering, conspiracy to traffic fraudulent identity documents, and conspiracy to commit computer hacking. Obviously, if you look at the case from a distance, he didn't directly engage in any of these things like drug sales, etc., but his oversight of the platform operations was central to his convictions. Now, in this case, objectors would say that the sentence was disproportionately harsh for Ross as a non-violent first-time offender, and supporters just see him as a tech-savvy idealist with libertarian views about free markets and privacy who built a system which was later exploited by others. Obviously, opponents view him as a calculating criminal who knowingly facilitated and profited from massive drug trafficking and other illegal activity. Anyway, this year, President Donald Trump granted him a full pardon, citing concerns about excessive sentencing and also a lot of popular support from Bitcoiners and other corners of the political and tech world. Right, that's Ross. Now let's do Ian Freeman. You know Ian Freeman? You don't, do you? Currently serving 8 years in federal prison for selling Bitcoin on local Bitcoins. Also ordered to pay restitution totaling more than $3.5 million to 29 of his so-called victims and forfeit various other assets that were seized during the investigation. Officially, he was cited as laundering over $10 million in proceeds from romance scams and other internet fraud. After looking into it, that's another way of saying he failed to correctly identify when he was dealing on local Bitcoins with the proceeds of said scams. He wasn't doing the scams, he was just facilitating financial transactions, and some of the money came from those scams. Something we go into in this conversation with his wife, Bonnie. So I'll let you make your own mind up if you think that Ian, the Bitcoiner slash libertarian activist and Free Talk Live radio host, was actually trying to rip off old ladies in his spare time. You can be the judge of that. Right, no need for the AI to dissect this episode. It's a pretty simple one. Bonnie recounts the situation that her and Ian find themselves in now, including a previous 6 a.m. FBI raid by a heavily armed group of about 40 enforcers, complete with armored vehicles and flashbang grenades, all available to watch online if you're interested. We also discuss the broader picture of Bitcoin and financial freedom and how the media has portrayed her husband. Now, as a Bitcoiner, you will probably find it quite easy to read between the lines of this interview, but for everyone else, please do your own research. Google the case, have a good look around the internet, listen to this podcast and make your own mind up. Thanks to Bonnie, of course, for hosting me at your home, and good luck with the campaign to get Ian pardoned next after Trump has pardoned Ross. If you want to find out more, www.freeiannow.org. That's FREIANNOW, freeiannow.org. If you think you can help. Right, talking of help, Bitcoin and Nostr stuff. According to the Fountain app, wait for it, the Free Cities podcast Strategic Bitcoin Reserve made history this week. Yeah, we didn't get any donations. First time in our history. And to be honest, I can guess why. The last couple of episodes haven't been that interesting for the Nostr crowd. I appreciate that. That's where most of our SBR donations come from, of course. Maybe this one will help. Who knows? I can't please everyone all the time. But, of course, I have to mention Bitcoin and Nostr each week because I'm a big fan and I use the services myself. Anyway, time for the convo. And in my time-honored tradition, I would normally say please sit back and relax for this one. But I feel that some of you may feel a lot of anxiety at various points in this interview, not least when you hear about Ian's 100 BTC Cassatius coin that went missing when the feds took it and it was never returned. Now, if you're a Bitcoiner, you'll know what a Cassatius coin is and you'll understand the gravity of it going missing from a safe and never coming back. Anyway, try and relax while you're sitting back, and while you're doing it, enjoy my conversation with Bonnie Freeman. Obviously, I'd like to talk about what happened
With Ian,
which is your husband, which is absolutely incredible. I mean, really incredible. I looked, last night I had a flick through to see what the media was saying about it, which is obviously...
Yeah.
Don't worry.
The government's statements are like the first things that come up and they contain lies.
Yeah.
They call him a scammer. Yeah. That should be illegal.
Well, listen to this. The first thing that came up for me was an NBC article about it. And it said, I had to write it down because it's such a funny thing, created a business that catered to fraudsters who targeted elderly women with romance scams.
What's crazy about that is that Ian had 1,000+ reviews on one site. He had untold numbers of people that went to his Bitcoin vending machines. And then he had tons of people that he sold to in different ways. So... Even if they really believe that they found 9 people that fit that description, that's not a way to characterize the whole business. That doesn't even begin to characterize the whole business. And one thing about the whole old ladies being scammed thing is that if somebody is scamming someone and then they convince that person to lie to you, then there's no possible way for you to know. All you can do is have a system where you try as hard as you possibly can to weed those types of things out. And I would be right next to Ian while he would be on the phone with people. There is one woman in particular that was on the stand, has been given money as a quote-unquote victim of Ian. And she was saying she was buying Bitcoin for her husband. And Ian normally... didn't do third-party sales, but he would just, he started doing it towards the end, and he says that that was his mistake. Like, that was one of the things that caused a lot more things that he didn't want to happen. But I was next to him while he was on the phone with this woman in particular. And he asked her all these questions. You could tell she was like getting tired of it. And when she said that she was buying it for her husband, Ian said, well, do you know your husband in real life? And she got so offended and was like, of course I know my husband. Why would you even ask that? She was lying. She wasn't even married. She was lying. And she was buying it for the scammer. And at that point, she actually knew that he was a scammer and that she was helping him because she believed his story that he could get her in trouble. And so she vehemently lied to Ian. And then she went on the stand and said that, well, he never even asked me anything. So that's what really happened.
Well, when I saw it, as I'm a Bitcoiner, I have been for a very long time as well. And I read between the lines quite quickly and thought, okay, wait a minute, you know. Because I understood what he was doing, and now I'm looking at people that fraud and selling Bitcoin to people are two completely different things. Like, yeah. How do you, there's only so much you can do to find out exactly who your customers are. And I know that, you know, everyone wants to know who their customer is. And I, as far as I know, and I know a lot of Bitcoiners, Bitcoiners are good people as well, who actually genuinely would want to know that as well. And therefore, I was reading so much about this. I stopped after about 20 minutes because I thought I'd rather hear it from you. But what struck me, and sorry, I'm just going to check that that's still rolling. Yeah. What struck me most was, and I was pretty, I couldn't believe it actually, was I saw some video of his arrest, which was absolutely insane. Mm-hmm. It was like 40 or 50 armed people coming in, even with a kind of little, you know, like camera on the end of a turret and a little drone, really armed, you know, with full gear. And as from what I know of Bitcoiners and, you know, from what I read between the lines about what he's actually been accused of, he's probably not a dangerous bloke. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go ahead and say, you would know him best.
He's dedicated his life to peace and non-violence.
Right. So when I saw that, obviously the conclusion I drew was, this is someone trying to send out a message. Like, you know, this is how we deal with people like you.
Yeah.
Coming in like the unbelievable force, mm-hmm. armored trucks in the mm-hmm. middle of the, or is it 2 o'clock in the morning or something? Was it like?
It was 6 in the morning, which everybody here is definitely asleep at that point. That's, they study you for weeks. They had a camera outside of our house for weeks. They had like in the discovery stuff, like, oh, there's this car with this license plate, which was mine because I met Ian during them staring at the house or, you know, filming the house. They study for weeks, and they would know that people here, libertarians that live here and on the other side, because it's a duplex, might still be awake at like 2 a.m. So they might do like someone else at 2 a.m. But they did us at 6 a.m. because everybody was definitely asleep. And they do that on purpose because they want you to be shocked, confused, stunned. And also, it's exactly what you're saying. The whole entire overuse of force was done that way just so that they can...
is that the FBI outside now?
I think it's because Mark is leaving. So while Mark is leaving, it'll probably be...
That's all right. Like I feel safe with a guard dog.
Yeah. He was in the raid.
Yeah, don't worry about that. Let's just carry on. What was I going to say? Because obviously... I also, especially if they've been studying you for a long time, mm-hmm. I doubt he looked like the kind of guy who was going to run away either.
That's so
true.
Do
you know what I mean?
That's definitely true. He has dedicated his life to, should I stop talking when he growls? Or should I can put him in the kitchen.
Oh, go on then. All right.
I think that'd be best because Mark is leaving or if somebody starts working outside.
Okay.
Okay. It's a mailman.
Oh. Or is it? Yeah. Does it? I mean, are you quite paranoid now?
Well, yeah, definitely. Not only has the government actually come and attacked my house, I was in the raid, people don't know, but people have heard about Ian's story on the news, schizophrenic people, and come here to threaten us. Like, for example, there's this guy, I won't even say his name. He said that he read about Ian's story in the news, and then it made him remember that Ian owed him $60 billion of Bitcoin.
$60 billion.
That's what he said.
Billion.
Yeah.
Right. He is crazy. No one owes anyone $60 billion of Bitcoin, but...
Yeah. And Ian didn't know him at all, but he was just like a local here in Keene, New Hampshire. And he would come multiple different times, and Ian is just like so patient and would talk to him for a long period of time every time. And it started to really freak me out. I was like, Ian, I don't want you like standing out on the porch talking to him or anything. One day Ian was gone. This was after the raid, but pre-sentencing. So Ian was here and he was allowed to go somewhere, but I stayed here. Like, he was filming a court case in Manchester or something. I take my dog on a walk, and when I came back, that man was blocking our front door. And I had to like tell him, I'm gonna go get somebody to talk to you. And he was like, you'd probably be the best one to talk to. And I just started running. I got my neighbor had to chase him away with like pulled a gun on him.
Oh shit.
So yeah, it totally makes me paranoid. The government's response is like directly the cause of that situation, and tons of other just weird things have happened to us.
We probably should.
Well, that's better.
All right, we should probably sum up the situation for everyone that's listening. My listeners won't know anything about this situation at all. Most people know Ross Ulbricht.
Mm-hmm.
That's the very high, you know, well known Bitcoin sort of jailing case.
Yes.
So, can you sum up the situation that Ian is involved in and now is currently in prison?
Yes. So Ian, he's the creator of a radio show called Free Talk Live, and he had somebody call in and tell him about Bitcoin, but he didn't get into it right then. Roger Veer was a listener, heard the caller, did like a week's worth of just everyday researching Bitcoin, and Roger Veer met up with Ian, and he was actually an angel sponsor of the show. There's a different word for it, angel sponsor, something like that.
Like an angel investor.
Yeah, and he sat down with Mark and Ian and said, hey, I see the vision of Bitcoin, and I want you guys to take my ad monies in Bitcoin. And so Ian took 10%, and he's always laughing about that, like, oh, what if he took 100%?
Well, everyone thinks that, yeah. Unfortunately.
But so... that happened, and then Bitcoin blew up a lot, and Ian just continued living his life and being an activist, a really renowned activist for New Hampshire. He's always like causing scenes, and it was like really like theatrical kind of activism, and everybody like disliked him. That was especially like a statist here in Keene, New Hampshire. Well, so I brought up the Roger Veer story to tell you that Ian never had to work ever again. He just didn't. He didn't have to scheme to make money. He absolutely didn't, and he's not even that kind of person. If he had nothing, he would be happy. His car is a 2007 RAV4.
Really?
Yeah.
We had a 2008 RAV4 for years.
I love my RAV4.
They're amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was, wow. Cool.
It's not a Lamborghini, is what
We've
I'm saying.
We've got a Hilux now. Oh, is it also a Toyota?
I don't know. It is. Yeah, yeah. I haven't heard of that.
It's a pickup version of a... it's like a RAV4, but with it...
That's cool.
Yeah, anyway. Sideline. Sorry, I'm detracting. Go on.
Well, I just was saying, basically, Ian lives in a like middle-class house, middle-class neighborhood. He is not motivated by money and wealth and like fine things. And one day, I'm not exactly sure the year off the top of my head, maybe 2016 or something, or maybe 2018, Ian decided to buy Bitcoin vending machines and to start selling Bitcoin on localbitcoins.com, if that's what it was.
Local Bitcoins, yeah, yeah, yeah. I know it well.
And the point was, it was activism for our church. Ian runs Free Talk Live and everything he does as a minister of the Shire Free Church. And it was just outreach for him, and he wanted to spread peaceful means of people having control of their own financial situation. And he believes that Bitcoin is one of the top most useful tools for peace. and he talks about it on the radio show all the time. He would talk on the radio show about how he was selling Bitcoin, and it wasn't some kind of a secret at all. And that was going on, and one day he did find out in 2018 that he was being investigated because the FBI agent who was in charge showed up and talked to his ex-girlfriend, and so she told him, because I think that they probably thought, oh, it's his ex-girlfriend, she probably hates Ian, but they were still friends. So the FBI kind of showed their hand, but Ian didn't change what he was doing because he wasn't doing anything wrong. And he did a few things to try to see, like, what were the laws. But the thing is, they purposely make the laws very hard to figure out what is legal and not legal as far as Bitcoin in the United States. And after Jeremy Kaufman's case with the SEC, the head of the SEC came out and said that that's on purpose. Jeremy Kaufman ran Library, the protocol that runs Odyssey, the video streaming platform. And he was complaining that, like, if you ask them to try to just tell you a roadmap, they purposely won't. And she, I don't remember her name, the head of the SEC, said that that's on purpose because if you show people what the laws are, then they can more easily go around it. That's not an excuse. That's not, oh my God, oh, we understand now. You know, that's horrible. You just want to make it to where nobody is doing anything correctly so you can go after them at all times, you know? So Ian even had a letter from it's not FinCEN, I'm sorry, it's the New Hampshire monetary, like, wing of bureaucrats. They said, we don't regulate that about Bitcoin, but the feds are different. So they went after him. They came to our house March 16th, 2021 at 6 a.m. And it was a randomly cold day. Like, I think anytime anybody hears this, they're going to think New Hampshire is insanely cold, but it was like 10 degrees at 6 a.m. that March 16th. It was like a freak thing. And it almost feels purposeful that they chose that day. But I woke up to some explosion sound, not even really processing what it was yet. I don't even remember being in bed. I remember walking behind Ian. Ian's walking in front of me. He grabs his robe. I grabbed my robe, but Ian, like, put his on, and I was holding my dog, so...
I saw that bit, actually.
Yeah.
I saw some security footage, and I saw that. He came out onto the veranda in just his dressing gown.
Yeah. Like,
and you had the dog in your arms.
He had the dog in his arms at that point.
Right. Okay.
But when I got to the top of the stairs, and there's an FBI agent with his head in the window and his gun in the window, pointing it at us and yelling at us to drop the dog and stuff like that, I was not yet even clothed. And they wanted me to just go outside like that. And Ian told them, like, no. Like, most people, I think, would just be like, oh, whatever, whatever. But Ian was, like, not moving. And he was like, no, she had a robe. She dropped it. Let her put the robe on. So I put on a robe. And then they told me that I could put on my jacket that was next to me, but they're screaming at me the whole time. And they told me to put on these specific shoes too, right next to the window they just exploded. And they were Ian's boots. I don't know why they wanted me to put them on. I'd rather go outside barefoot, but they were filled with like a cup of glass each. Yeah. From the window of our old house. Like, this was sharp glass.
And that window, correct me if I'm wrong, had been smashed because they put a kind of like camera through it or something. Isn't that what, or something like a, it looked bizarre. I was watching the footage of it.
The window that they smashed like that is on the other side of the house, and it was a battering ram on a Bearcat, which is a ballistic something, armored something.
Yeah.
It's a tank.
Military stuff.
It's a military tank that the federal government gave to Keene, and Keene had to vote on it. And 90 something people went out to say, no, don't do this. And maybe like one person went to testify it was a good thing. And the Keene City Council said, yeah, we're just going to do it anyway. It was this whole thing where they had a slogan that was, thanks, but no tanks. Nobody wanted this. Keene City Council did anyway. I think that was 2016. And of course, the first time they ever had a need for the Bearcats was raiding my house on Leverett Street, just like in a neighborhood.
I would really, whoever's listening to this, I would really say go and search out the video online, because it's really insane. It looks like something from Iraq, like a military exercise. There's tens of, I think it was about 40 or 50 fully armored people with automatic guns and, yes. and a big tank-like thing coming in.
There were two of those, I think. No. Well, you know what? There might have been one, because the thing is, like, when you're going through something so traumatic, I had a couple things I remembered wrong, and I've never experienced anything like this in my life, but there was, like, when they finally let me go, they let me leave in my car and not come back to my house until they were done here, and I believed, I was looking at the garage in front of me, I believed that it was, like, exploded. I believed that, and I was like, what the heck, and I drove away. It was never like that. That's just, like, trauma, and that's why they do it like that. They also didn't, I didn't have my glasses on the whole time. Like, I'm wearing contacts right now. It was very disorienting, and they do that all on purpose. You can find the video at Odyssey has the full version, and it's on the free Keen channel, but it's
also
on YouTube.
I think I saw it on an NBC. Oh. So, you know, they put together a news article about it, but they, you know, whatever. You'll see what I mean. It's like snowing, and it's all at night, and it looks just like something out of this world.
We have the video of the moment they throw the, it's not a grenade, but a flashbang, and you can see everybody, and they didn't yell out anything. And they claimed in the trial, because Ian's lawyer said, like, it's, you're supposed to yell out a warning before you throw a flashbang. And then they just went up there and lied. They were just like, we did yell out a warning, but they didn't.
I mean, what's obviously true, though, is it's almost like they had all this stuff they wanted to do, but no, like they had beautiful clothes on and no party to go to. So they found something and then they're like, right, let's hit it with everything we've got. But it seemed completely unnecessary. I would hazard a guess. If someone from the FBI could have knocked on the door at 10 in the morning and said, would you come with us? And probably could have had a discussion about it, and, you know, rather than what actually happened.
Yes, absolutely. Like, the excuse they used was that one of Ian's roommates, which doesn't live here anymore, but used to live here at the time, because they were roommates when I met Ian. I only met Ian months into this happening. Owned guns legally. He legally owned guns. And they just kept putting that out on the news, and in the trial, they would say, well, we had to do it like this because Ian's roommate had an armory of weapons. They were all legally owned. They tried to find what they could go after him for. The ATF was here. The post office was here. The IRS was here. The FBI was here. Local police was here. I think I'm missing one, but yeah. Yeah. So that's the excuse they used. But absolutely, anytime they could have just knocked on the door and said, you're coming with us, Ian, and had a conversation with him in jail, or not in jail, whatever, but they could have handed him paperwork. There would be no danger. When I was out there, so basically I got told to go out there wearing the boots filled with glass, and I was handcuffed, and I started trying to think to myself, my dog's just running around in the streets, by the way, my little chihuahua. There was SUVs everywhere. It was like pitch black dark still, and I was really worried about that, so I'm just trying to, like, think what to do. So I said to my FBI agent, who was, like, handling me, am I under arrest? And, you know, I said, am I being detained? And he said, you're being restrained so we can make sure that there's nothing in the house that's going to hurt us. It's so dumb. They had all the people outside. They had a drone go in, and I was still held for, like, 2 hours handcuffed. It was cold. They eventually put me in an SUV, but with all the doors open for whatever reason. And they came up and threatened me with my dog. They said, is this your dog? I was like, oh, yeah, please, can you put him in here? Blah, blah, blah. Because that's, like, all I was worried about. And she was like, I'm going to have to put him in the pound. And so I obviously start freaking out, even though I had told everyone so far when they asked. I was like, no, I don't want to talk to you guys. I don't have anything to say. And then she's like, I'm going to have to put this dog in the pound. Just a lie. I was like, why? I'm not under arrest. And she just immediately started hitting me with questions. And she asked me, what is the Mighty Moose Mart, which is a convenience store where a Bitcoin vending machine was? Yes. I was just like, it's a convenience store. She said, why do libertarians go there? And I was just like, what? I don't know what you're asking. It's a convenience store. Yeah, all these are tactics.
Do you know what it sounds like? And this is probably true. It sounds like that the FBI or whoever it is, I don't know about all these different agencies, they see libertarians as this kind of, it's like a militia.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it probably...
They're paranoid people.
It probably couldn't be further from the truth. I don't know. I don't know the libertarian community here, but I do know quite a few libertarians, and they're normally the opposite of that. But I tell you what, like, we don't need to discuss the idiocracy of it. Let's talk about the actual ins and outs of what transpired, because it's quite, you know, it's pretty serious. It's not just, oh God, you know, the FBI are being idiotic, but there's been some real life consequences of this, hasn't there? So what actually happened? Like, how did he end up in prison? I've seen stuff about the Crypto Six on the news and all this kind of stuff. You can see how the news has spun it into this thing, you know, like, so what happened? What caused him to actually end up in prison from essentially being a middleman for Bitcoiners or Bitcoin? People wanted to buy Bitcoin, or, you know.
Well, basically, they didn't even have much of a case except for charging. I wish I could remember the exact original charges, but when they came here, they got all of his records because he was doing, in his mind, the right thing, due diligence, keeping records of his, like, sales. Like, everybody that bought Bitcoin, not only did they have to answer a bunch of questions, but they also would hold up a piece of paper saying, my name is blah, 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 and I am buying Bitcoin for myself. And they use those pictures in the trial as if it was like some, they just spin everything. They spin everything in the trial. So they're trying to make it look like, look what he was making these people do. Confirming that they really are the person that wants to buy Bitcoin.
Exchanges. I don't know whether they still do it now, but back in the day, that's what every single exchange used to do.
Yeah, I think that's what he was like basing it off of. Yeah,
that's right.
So after a year and, like, I think 8 months, we went to trial, and at that point, there had been up to, okay, I know there were 32 charges when it was only Ian and Aria left. There were 6 people charged, and one person got their charges completely dropped. And I really believe it's because she's an older woman. She is a grandma. And they had this narrative. They didn't want to be charging a grandma when their whole entire thing to the jury was going to be, look what they did to old ladies.
That's what I read.
Yep. Yeah.
Romance scams. That sounds so sad.
Yep. And it is sad what happened to these people, but Ian didn't do any of the sad parts. Like, these people would get scammed, and sometimes for years, and then the scammer would come out and say, and it was honestly, the thing is, I can't even put myself in the position of actually believing these types of stories they were told. They were told, like, I'm your online boyfriend, you know. I have an interest in you, 60-year-old lady, but I'm like a 25-year-old man. I work on a oil rig. The thing is, I work for, you know, Exxon, but our oil rig broke. Can you send me $500,000 to fix it?
Is that really what was in some of the things?
I don't know if it was $500,000, but that exact story was one of the things that a woman fell for, obviously having nothing to do with Ian.
And can I, just so I can get it straight, say that was one of the incidences. Was Ian getting prosecuted because he was acting as the kind of middleman? So he wasn't, they're saying his job should have been to know that that lady was getting scammed.
So that's the thing. Ian would never have heard that story. They would fall for a scam like that. And then when it went on long enough, they've already milked these old ladies. And these are like unknown scammers. The FBI has never put effort into finding out who they are. At some point they would get told, hey, listen, you've been being scammed and now you're going to get in trouble if you don't work with us. And they would tell them to buy a Bitcoin from Ian and tell them that it's for themselves. Or if not for themselves, if that was going to be too obvious for some reason, tell them that I'm your husband or your cousin or something and you're buying it for me to send to me. And Ian only went along with those ones a couple times. Not that he like got burned and knew it was a scam, but he would research scams so he would be better able to tell when something was a scam. And there were multiple people that testified in trial that Ian helped stop scams when he figured them out, because these things are so intricate. I've been nearly scammed. Somebody called me from... I wasn't anywhere near nearly scammed because I knew of the scam, but somebody called me one day and was like talking in this like super American voice. And they're like, "Hey, are you Bonnie Freeman? Well, the President Trump has just pardoned your husband." And I was just like, "This is a scam." Instantly. And he was just like, "Well, hold on, because I know you're probably really excited. We need a couple things from you." And I just was like, "You're scamming me, so stop." I hung up, and then I immediately called his parents, because he said that he had talked to his to Ian's parents too. And they're 76, I think, and they did not get scammed by that. They were like, "Yeah, we thought that was kind of fishy. Like, it's not just being old makes you more likely to be scammed."
Hold on a second. So in that instance, when they phoned you up and said he's been released or been pardoned, what were they about to scam? How were they about to scam you?
I know exactly how they were going to. And it's not that I researched it. It's that it happened to another person who was in prison that I know's friend. So one day, this person who was in prison that I know, her friend texted me and was saying, "Hey, they're letting her out early. I don't really want to say who, because just like embarrassing, I guess." And I was just like, "Whoa, that's insane. They talked to you about that?" And she was like, "Yes, but the thing is, I need help. I need to get the money to pay for her ankle bracelet, or else she's going to get stuck in there for 3 more weeks if it doesn't get paid for." And honestly, I've never like dealt with a situation like that. I was like, "Okay, well, will you come over so we can talk about this?" And not only did she come over in the middle of Ian doing Free Talk Live, so I didn't have Ian right there next to me, but she was in a rush. She was like, "It has to be done in 30 minutes. I just need like $120 more. Like, do you think you can spot it for me? I'm sure she'll pay you back." And I was like, this is so weird. It doesn't sound right. We need to talk to Ian. So when Ian's radio show went on break, he instantly heard the story and said, "They're scamming you." And she was like, "Oh, crap." And then I sat there with her waiting for the scammer to call her back. And it was this person doing honestly like a fake America cowboy voice. And they were like, "Yeah, so ma'am, did you get the money to us on Venmo yet? Because person's waiting to get out of prison." It was another person in the Crypto Six. And she had already sent them, I think, $2,000 on Venmo. And she was like, "Well, listen, my friends are telling me that this might be a scam, so I'm going to need more info." And he was like, "Listen, I'll send you this URL and you can look it up and see where we're calling from. It's going to be the Bureau of Prisons, ma'am." And it was like, her heart sank and she realized she had been scammed and that person was not getting out of prison.
That's amazing. Yep. I mean, that seems...
By the way, Venmo refused to give her the money back and her bank refused to give her the money back. So their whole argument that Bitcoin is worse because it can't be reversed is just stupid.
Gosh, you know, when you looking at it in hindsight, you think, come on, you must have known that. That's crazy. Who rings you up and says, "Quick, I need some money to help get someone out of prison"?
Desperate people who want their friend out of prison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's go back. Here's the other. Right. So, in order to get this straight again in my mind, the problem was that, in the case of the let's call them the romance scams, the scammers were confident. There was a confidence tricks with the ladies, and then at some point along there, they would say, "I want you to buy me Bitcoin," and that's when they came to him. So the whole scam's been going on for ages. They just wanted a way to get Bitcoin. And were they doing it elsewhere? Do you know? Were they going to other people to get it and stuff?
Yes. And in fact, one of the people who lost a total of, I think, $500,000 in total, only like $100,000 of it was through sending Bitcoin to Ian. So he lost another $400,000, right? They never investigated that. They never tried to figure that out at all. It's and I'm not sure if all that would be like through a Bitcoin seller or anything. These people were being scammed for sometimes years.
It's amazing.
And Ian would have never talked to any of these scammers, if that is not clear. So how can he conspire with them?
Well, obviously he's not conspiring with them.
That was a charge, though.
Yeah, but I mean, how did they prove that then?
So this is what they called it conspiracy to launder money. They said that you should be able to tell in some cases just because of somebody's race, just because of somebody's age, that they wouldn't actually be interested in buying Bitcoin for you. So a red flag should have gone up. And since it didn't, it's called willful blindness. But the thing is, it's just a thought crime because it's so subjective. Like if you get on the phone with somebody and talk to them for like 20 minutes and you drill them about, like, you really want to buy this Bitcoin? How'd you hear about Bitcoin? And they're telling you stuff like, I'm interested in buying it for my grandchildren. Yeah, I just want to have something to invest for my grandchildren, something like that. Why is that something where you need to say, no, you're not allowed to buy Bitcoin from me because you're old? They literally used one man's race, like a man that was black. He sent his picture in. He said he was a CEO. And I don't remember the case of why he was lying about that, but apparently he was lying. And the prosecutor, Seth Aframe, who's a civil rights like lawyer, that's his whole thing. He put up that picture of that man who was shirtless and wearing like a gold necklace in his house. And he was holding up the thing that said, I blah, 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 want to buy Bitcoin from me. And they put up that picture and said, does this look like a CEO to you? What the hell are we supposed to take from that? CEOs don't have chests. And it was in his house. It's not like he was like pretending it was at work or something.
Was it? It sounds like back then he was doing it all on the phone as well. Were people actually phoning up to say, can I buy some Bitcoin and stuff?
Yep. Tons of people that have never had a problem, never came out and said they were being scammed, actually would meet him on local Bitcoins, and then he required that they would call him. He would look these people up on like white pages sometimes too, and the internet, to make sure like they didn't have like some kind of like, oh, well, this person's doing something really illegal and it's like public information. He definitely did due diligence. And there were cases where things seemed weird. He held the person's money, found one of their relatives to talk to about them, and that woman was getting scammed. He found the woman's son and was able to get their money back to them. And one person came and testified for Ian, saying, I'm so grateful to Ian because he kept my mother, my older mother, from getting scammed.
What did they get him on in the end? And what was the result?
The jury convicted him of 8 charges. One was running a unlicensed money transmitting business,
right?
Kind of a catch-all.
But hold on a sec, I've got a feeling that wouldn't cut it now, would it? Like people talk about that in the Bitcoin world at the moment. I don't know enough about this, but I thought that wasn't such a watertight case in the case of Bitcoin. Well, do you know what I mean? Like, I think haven't there been any test cases on it?
Well, this might answer your question. One of the crypto six, one of the 6 people that got arrested, made a motion with their lawyer before trial. They ended up taking a plea deal because this wasn't successful, so they believed that it would be bad for them if they went to trial. So one of the people did a motion where they said, hey, this is a big question. There's a legal term for like a big question. And the idea is, we don't know that Bitcoin falls under this Patriot Act law that says funds. Its only definition of what we're talking about here are funds. Nobody has ever in Congress said, hey, Bitcoin falls under this. And now they have, but not at the time. The judge just said, well, to me, it seems like Bitcoin falls under funds, so denied. So the judge is just deciding things. The thing is, the law that they prosecuted Ian under was a 2001 law, the Financial Privacy Act or something. It's part of the Patriot Act. And how does Bitcoin fall under a law that was created in 2001? You know what I mean? So that was the argument. And I'm not sure what you mean by very recently. Like, was there a...
I'm probably, I just know that term, you know, money transmitter, and because I think they were talking about trying to apply it to nodes at home.
Oh.
As in, you know, if you are, I run a node at my home, mm-hmm. and if lightning trans, you know what a lightning transaction is? Yeah. If they go through your node, you're transmitting, if you see what I mean. I mean, it would cause all nodes to be illegal.
It's not like I agree with it. I don't think that it should be a law, but I can almost see it when you bring in lightning, but not without lightning, because there has to be a third party. And the thing is, the lawyer in Ian's case said, yeah, so like when you send Bitcoin to someone, the third party facilitates, that's not a third party. The whole point of Bitcoin is that there's no third party. So he fundamentally didn't understand Bitcoin, and he still shoehorned Bitcoin into this 2001 law. And that's why Ian got money transmitting business. Yeah.
What were the other ones, if you can remember? I mean, just roughly, generally, we don't need to know the absolute ins and outs of it, but
there was money laundering, which even though the jury convicted him of that, the judge a few months later threw it out. And that's nearly unheard of. That's like something they don't normally do. So he currently doesn't have money laundering. It got thrown out like with prejudice, like it won't come back. And then he still kept conspiracy to money launder, which is crazy. And then there are 4 counts of tax related charges, but I think they were the one that's worse than failure to file. And the thing was, I almost understand nearly how failure to file would apply, but not the one that he got, because they had to prove that he did have a tax burden and that he knew he had a tax burden and he didn't pay it. They didn't prove that. The IRS person that they brought in to be a witness for the trial answered Ian's lawyer's question. Ian's lawyer asked, so isn't it, this is just a guess, right? Isn't it completely possible that he didn't owe any taxes? And she said, yeah, that's completely possible. So if that's completely possible, then they didn't prove it. And he got 4 charges of the tax one.
Okay. What was his sentence?
He got sentenced to 8 years in prison and I think 2 years after of probation. Yeah. And restitution, which included a 100 cassatious Bitcoin, a 1 Bitcoin, bunch of gold.
Say that again. I missed that bit.
So it's a really unfortunate thing, but Ian had a 100 Bitcoin cassatious
coin. Really?
And
what happened to that?
Well, when they raided the house, it really wasn't supposed to be here, but it was here. It was in a safe and they took it, and we kind of thought we could get it back because I filed for the Shire Free Church saying, listen, this shouldn't have been taken because we have proof that somebody gave it to us and they wrote an affidavit way before the crimes Ian's being convicted of. So please give it back. And that included like some gold and maybe silver. So I had a like lawsuit against the government asking them to give the money back because that's a thing you can do. But whenever Ian went to prison, his lawyers came up with a deal with the government because they wanted to make it like, well, he needs to pay $25 million and he'll just be like working the rest of his life and like paying off the government. But Ian's lawyers came to an agreement that they would just let them keep the stuff that they took from the house. I don't remember exactly how much money it was now, but just the cassatious Bitcoin is insane.
Well, that's worth $10 million, coin.
So it was way over $10 million in total of what they took. And I had to like sign off saying, yeah, I agree to drop my case. I don't bring any claim to it. It really sucks.
Who's got that coin now then? Do you think that just disappeared into the system and someone pocketed it?
I think the thing that they're supposed to do when they take Bitcoin from people is they have to sell it as soon as possible. And then they keep the dollars instead of the...
Yeah, but that's a cassatious coin. If anyone's listening and they don't know what that is, that's a physical coin which has a private key on it, which gives you access to a certain amount of Bitcoin. And there were 1,000 Bitcoin cassatious coins.
Wow.
And there are 100 ones, I think. And mostly they're 1 Bitcoin ones.
Mm-hmm.
I forget the name.
There was
a
1 too.
Right. But 100 Bitcoin cassatious coin, so it's literally a coin, currently is worth about $10 million for that one coin. That's incredible. Mm-hmm. But what I was going to say was, if the government sold that coin, it's not like they're selling some Bitcoin. You know, remember they auctioned all that Bitcoin off from Silk Road, was it? No. One of the other confiscations that they did a while ago. Mm. It's different if you're actually selling a coin. That would make it into the news, presumably, wouldn't it? Like,
That is a really good point. I don't know what... I have no way to actually know what happened to it, but all I know is that I'm always hearing when they take Bitcoin that within their own rules, they're supposed to immediately sell it. But then again, when it's like something like precious metals, is it the same? And with the Bitcoin, they actually damaged it before he was convicted. They, you know, did the whole scratch off the back thing. Yeah.
Oh, shit.
So they already damaged it before he was convicted of anything. If he would have like completely like got off, what was going to happen then? They ruined it.
It'd be interesting to check that address out, see if anyone's ever moved it.
Yeah.
Well, that's what's under the scratch off bit, isn't it? It's the private key.
So I think that what happened was before he was even convicted, they opened it and put it into like a FBI wallet, so therefore they probably just sold the Bitcoin,
right?
Now that I'm thinking all this through.
Blimey. Anyway, that's beside the point. So
it's crazy though.
It is crazy, especially because they haven't given you a reason why. Really, you can't just have your possession back.
Exactly. No, it's just that they were going to threaten us with something potentially worse, so it just seemed like a good
plea
agreement for because there was like this 6 month after he went to prison on November 2nd, 2023, he was in the county jail for over 6 months, which he was supposed to be sent to a federal prison and in a camp specifically, so much better of conditions, such better conditions than a county jail. County jails are just so much worse. He had to be in like a cage with a tiny window most of the time. The people in there are actually like sometimes violent people. You know, it's just like so much worse. And when I would go visit him, it was just, I would talk to him through a thick pane of glass. I couldn't actually like touch him or anything because they've just kept their COVID regulations. So he had to be in there like for like 6 months because they were still... The lawyers were still arguing about, well, how much are we going to take for restitution, quote unquote, which I put it in quotes because Ian didn't do anything wrong to anyone, but still he was ordered to pay restitution to other people's victims, in my opinion. But because of all that long wait, Ian's lawyers, we never ended up having a hearing about restitution because Ian's lawyers made that deal and Ian agreed to it, and Ian had me go sign off that I agreed to it. And when I signed off that I agreed to it, they would send me like, this is what we want you to agree to. And they put all this extra stuff. And I was like, I made it take a lot longer because I was like, I'm not signing that I will never hold the government accountable for anything that happened March 16th, 2021, and all this extra stuff you're trying to add in there. So they actually sent it back more bare bones until I signed it. Yeah.
So how long has he been in prison so far?
Since October 2023, so a year and 3 months.
And what are you imagining? How long do you think it's going to last?
The idea that I hear thrown around a lot is that with this thing called FSA, I don't remember what it stands for, that most people do 85% of their sentence. So 85% of...
6 years.
8 years. So yeah, like something like 6 years.
Crazy. And how often do you get to see him?
I can see him 2 times a week, and I do. And I can drive there. It's 1 hour and 10 minutes away, so that's irritating. But I get there and I go through very minimal security. It's really not bad. I mean, the guards are just awful, awful psychopaths. But they don't mess with me that much. And I go through this like pretty quick security thing that I'm in this giant day room and we can like hug and like sit there and play dominoes, and I can visit him for, I think, 4 hours at a time, every time.
And what does he do in prison?
Ian meditates and reads and works out a lot. Lots of the guys have been commenting that he's getting like muscular.
Getting quite buff.
Yeah. Those are the kind
it's
of
not
the
all
things.
Bad then.
Yeah. And the thing I just honestly love to mention is that he's just not suffering. He's not having like some kind of like horrible, like the only thing that's really, really bad about it is being separated from me. Like, and also being separated from his like work. Ian does nothing but work and work and work, he like works hard and plays hard kind
of thing. What was his work? You better explain that.
Free Talk Live, running the radio show Free Talk Live, and it was every single day at the time. Since I'm one of the only people really running it right now, it's just gone to weekends only. Just had to happen. It's like something had to give, and it's so much better because I just have too much stuff to do to have the show on every single night. And there always has to be a first chair host that knows how to do all the things. And too many times that was just me for like weeks at a time. So, and the thing was, Ian could do that. Ian could do that fine. He's just like not like the average person. So that's one reason I would say that one thing that sucks for him is being away from activism and Free Talk Live, because one thing me and Ian love to do is go and record at court cases. And I think it's the most effective activism is if somebody's being wrongly convicted of something in New Hampshire, we would always be counted on to be there with a camera, and the judges start acting a lot different. They are a lot more sensible and accountable if they have a camera on their face. That's such amazing activism. So Ian's taken away from that and just, you know, enjoying his liberty, enjoying life, but also...
Is anyone else taken on that role since he's been away then? Of, you know... New Hampshire, you've got a lot of free staters here and a lot of libertarians and stuff, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. There's a person named Mr. Penguin. He runs thinkpenguin.com, and he's on Free Talk Live sometimes, and he is a prolific filmer. He filmed all the really good footage from the raid that wasn't from our house cameras. Like, he got all the way up to Ian, who was handcuffed, and he's like, good morning, in the video, and he got pushed, like, by the cops, and he got threatened.
Why do you think they take it so seriously? Why do you think they're taking it so seriously? Like, and I'm thinking here about, you know, the way they've done it with the armored tanks and all that, and now, I mean, 8 years in prison is a big deal. It's not just a small, you know.
I think that one of the reasons they took it so seriously is because Bitcoin is a threat to the government's power. I think it really is. And I know lots of Bitcoiners don't like to use it like that. Like, I think they like to use it like dollar number go up. And I think that Ian definitely falls more under the camp of Bitcoin should be used. And that's one thing he was always talking about on the radio. One reason he was trying to get Bitcoin in people's hands who wanted it. Because, like, I remember when I first heard about Bitcoin, to me it seemed like, oh, there's no possible way I could figure that out. I don't really know why in hindsight. It just seems like that's a huge hurdle. Just one thing for activism Ian would do, which is just proof he wasn't in the business of scheming to make money, was when he would meet new people who were remotely interested in Bitcoin, he'd have them download Edge Wallet on their phones, and he'd like send them like $20 of Bitcoin, so that way they had it, and they're like, wow, this is how it works. That was so easy. And he would also, a huge thing he would do was go to businesses and meet with their owners many times and convince them to take Bitcoin, give them tablets, set them up with AnyPay. And at one point, Keene, New Hampshire had the most businesses that took Bitcoin per capita than any place in the world. But I think that ever since this is a huge reason that they would take it so seriously. Ever since the raid on our house, lots of businesses really went like, oh, I don't know if I should be involved in that anymore. Got rid of their vending machines. It just stopped taking Bitcoin.
But I mean, since then, I think at least, Bitcoin's become far more legitimized. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's changed in that sense? Do you think people's opinion of it's changed? Do you think in hindsight, people might look back and go, that was a bit full on?
I think that Trump is the only reason that's changing. And it's, I think that under Biden, he and Elizabeth Warren, if you know who that is, they were trying to make it seem like such a dirty, bad thing that you could only possibly be interested in Bitcoin if you're a money launderer, as if you couldn't do the same thing with cash, you know. They wanted to make it seem like such a bad, scary thing at the time. And for, I don't know why Trump has made this pivot, but, and maybe it's the people around him. I feel like Vivek Ramaswamy and his son, Donald Trump Jr., and some other people really got in his ear and made him realize like he should be team Bitcoin. And I think that it's a huge reason people are changing their minds, because like my dad, he's just, you know, a normal guy. I'd been talking to him about Bitcoin for a long time. And you know how this works. It's like, you'll try to talk to your parents about something, like say it's a health thing, like, hey, you guys should really cut down on your salt. And they don't listen. But then they hear it on TV and they're like, you know, I've been thinking I should cut down on my salt. That is totally a thing. So I do think that the culture is changing. I think it's more so because Biden is out of office, because he, whether it was him or somebody controlling him, I don't know. He definitely seemed to be the one that was way more anti-crypto. And the thing was, the raid happened a month and a half or 2 months and a half after Biden took office. So I always say that that's a huge reason why it happened at all.
Wow. What about, so obviously another high profile Bitcoiner, Ross Ulbricht.
Oh yeah.
Has been pardoned.
By Trump, yeah.
And what do you know, does Trump even know about this case, do you think?
I don't think he knew about it before. He talked to Angela McArdle, who was the Libertarian Party chair. He agreed to talk to her because he believed that libertarians are big enough to be a spoiler group of like a voting bloc. And he asked her, what do you think I have to do to get the libertarians votes? And the first thing she said was, you should pardon Ross Ulbricht. And he said, who is he? I'll do it.
Yeah.
I love pardoning people. That's what he said. That's what she said he said. And so I don't think he was familiar, but he was willing to do it to get elected. But the thing was, he went above and beyond that. Like he promised to commute the sentence of Ross Ulbricht at the Libertarian Party convention. And I've talked to Ross Ulbricht's mom. Somebody knocked on the door, but.
Do you want to answer it?
Maybe I'll just see if, like, it.
It's your FBI agent.
No, I hope not. I forgot somebody's coming here, but to fix my cameras. Like, I have cameras on the house that are broken. Yeah.
Oh, right.
Well, they're just not, like, showing me my feed, you know, of my cameras outside.
We can be quick. We've been going in now.
Oh,
already.
No, they're able to go in on the other side. That's just why I asked them.
Oh, okay.
They just have to access the basement. But
Trump pardons Trump, you know.
So I talked to Ross Ulbricht's mom. They didn't know until it happened that Trump had decided to make it a full pardon instead of a commutation.
What? Like when they saw it on Twitter or whatever?
When he called her. Ulbricht.
Did he? Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
And no, like supporters even knew that. I don't think Angela McArdle knew that, but maybe she said she did. I'm not sure. But it went from, you know, oh, thank God Ross is going to get out, like awesome, and his sentence will be commuted, meaning, oh, you just don't have to do anymore kind of thing, to not only did he give him a full and unconditional pardon, but he said on his Truth Social, which he always reposts on Twitter, that the people who did that to Ross were lunatics and, there's another word, scum. So he clearly has genuinely made a change in position from, I don't know how I feel about this Bitcoin thing because I love the dollar so much, to the people who would do this to someone like Ross Ulbricht are scum and lunatics. So.
But I mean, like, I'm a Bitcoiner, and I've never heard of Ian. I've heard of Ross. Mm-hmm. Everyone's heard of Ross.
Yeah.
Are there other examples of this in the States? Are there other groups of people that Bitcoiners that are in jail that no one knows about?
Yeah. There's somebody named Mark Hopkins. He did an interview on Free Talk Live. He was out of Texas. He did, I think, 18 months in prison for the same kind of stuff as Ian, just selling Bitcoin. I think it was on localbitcoins.com as well. What they did with him was he wanted to kind of fight it, but then they threatened to go after his wife. So he just took a plea deal.
So, I mean, what position do you think you're in to ever expect something like a pardon or a, whatever?
Well, Trump elected or appointed a pardon czar the other day.
Really?
So strange, yeah.
Who's that then?
Alice Johnson. She's one of the people, I only know who she is because Kim Kardashian advocated for her to get pardoned. She had been facilitating drug deals. She says she never like touched the cocaine, but it was cocaine. And at the time, I don't remember the decade, maybe the 90s or the 80s, there were minimum sentencing that were so high for drug things in, I think it was Alabama, that she got life in prison.
Oh my God.
Yeah, just a nice mom, kind of older lady. It's a really sad situation. And Trump pardoned her, I think his last, not this most recent term, but the last one. And he appointed her, the pardon czar, but I'm not exactly sure what that means yet. But I think that he's just getting so many requests because he let Ross Ulbricht out. And the thing is, the other day, maybe last Wednesday, I think, Trump went somewhere and gave a speech and said that he's ending Elizabeth Warren and Biden's war on crypto. And so the next thing we're trying to say to people is, or say to get this message we're trying to get to him, lots of people, including like the Samurai wallet people, people who are going getting gone after by the Bitcoin or in Tornado Cash, people are who are getting gone after for Bitcoin. We're trying to say to him, then release the prisoners of war if you ended the war on crypto, please, because that's what you would do if you ended a war.
I can see nothing wrong with that. I'm just surprised that it's not more commonly known, because it's a big deal.
Yeah.
8 years in prison for local Bitcoins is pretty much is yeah. what it is. Let's face it. You know.
I think there's a lot of this sense of like, what can you do about it? What can we do? Like, well, what, now we know, what can we do about it?
And well, you can go to Alice, the czar.
Well, I don't mean me. I mean, like, if I try to tell somebody, like, I only really even have a presence on Twitter because when Ian went to prison, I just started trying to get people's attention about it. The first person to, like, tweet about it was Jeff Berwick. It was so nice. Like, he's, like, a big libertarian in Mexico.
Yeah, I know.
I can get people's attention about it, then they know about it, but then they, I feel like they think, what can I do about this, you know?
Well, except, I suppose you could argue that you're in a new paradigm now. I mean, I think most people I know would have never predicted that Ross Ulbricht would have been freed.
Oh my God, no. It feels that's quite fake.
Because that was, that was the guy who's been locked up forever in a box as mm-hmm. as an example to everyone. And everyone knew yes. that. And that was quite serious.
And the judge said that was why it was an example to everyone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he's out.
Yes, that's insane.
Was he, where's he from, by the way, Ross?
Austin, Texas.
Austin, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do many people up here know him at the time, back in the day? Was he part of this New Hampshire thing or not?
Before? Do you mean before he got before arrested?
Yeah.
I don't think really anyone knew who he was before he got arrested. I think he was just like a private person. Then he gets arrested for being allegedly dread private pirate Roberts. And
well, Mark actually said he interviewed him on mm-hmm. on Free Talk Live.
Oh,
when he was Dread, what's his name?
Dread Pirate Roberts.
Yeah,
but like, was he openly Ross Ulbricht?
No, well, he wasn't then.
I don't know if anybody knows of that. I honestly could be wrong.
Maybe I misheard him. But I'm when I was speaking to Mark, I think he said he spoke to him on the radio.
I know that Ian has spoken to Ross when Ross was in prison waiting his trial, but I don't know if he did before that. And honestly, I don't want to spread a misinformation. I could be wrong that maybe people did know who he was before then. I just thought he was like a private person before that, but I could be wrong.
Anyway, well, look, I think it's an incredible story, and I'm surprised at myself because I've been a Bitcoiner for a long time. Not I live in the UK, obviously. We are a much smaller network of people over there, but I know, you know what's going on. We know all about most things, and I've never heard of it before. And it seems like, you know, quite a big-ish deal. You know, I know it's not on the scale of Ross Ulbricht and life in prison forever, but it's still a massive deal. And I would have hope that maybe, you know, this year or next year that there might be some kind of advancement, you know, a la Ross Ulbricht. You never know.
I know. I mean, you really never know, because that situation with Ross was just like a miracle. When I first heard that, I was driving away from the Libertarian Conference. I didn't want to stick around. And Mark actually texted me and said, Trump just said free Ross. And I was like, that doesn't seem possible. It's not real. I pulled it up, and the person I was driving back to New Hampshire with, we listened to the speech, and we were like laughing out loud. We were just like, it was insane. It didn't seem possible. It didn't seem real. And from then on, then the next thing was just like, I was putting stickers everywhere that said, vote Trump to free Ross, vote Trump to free Ross. I have a convenience store here, and I supplied them with stickers, and they've supplied it to all of the college students. Oh, now all the college students here in Keene know who Ross is. Mm-hmm. And they're all excited that he was freed too.
What have you spoken to Ian about that situation with Ross? Like, because I don't know, it must be, not that I could ever know what it's like to be locked up. It would be my worst nightmare. In fact, I'm not the kind of person that would do well in a situation like that.
Neither.
But it must be quite hard to think about things like possibly getting out when it's not a definite. Because you could die a million deaths every night the day you found out it wasn't going to happen, when you thought it was going to happen, and then you don't think it's going to happen. And, you know, and obviously he must have thought about it since Ross got out. Is there anything you've talked about?
Yeah, I run a website, freeiannow.org. Well, I'm not the one going and putting things in. I just like have hired someone to do that. But, and so like with Ross, we talk about like what kind of angles can we put on the website, stuff like that. But Ian's not like a worrier. Like, it's insane. I've never met anybody so tranquil. The thing is, he was already kind of institutionalized because he did some jail time in Keene. I don't remember why right now. I can't remember why he went to jail, but it was like something silly like activism stuff. It was not drugs, or he had no violent criminal record. That's shocking me that I forgot that.
He's not that, but it sounds not that bothered about being in prison, you say, no?
Yeah. He has said that the worst part is just being separated from me.
Well, that's nice to hear.
Everybody is friendly to him. He's just a cool guy. Like, everybody, like, all other men just love Ian. Like, they just get along with him.
Has he talked about what he wants to do when he gets out?
That's, like, oddly a thing that doesn't get talked about that much. And sometimes I think, like, the other people would find that strange. But I feel like me and Ian are just really in the moment all the time. Like, I talk to him about what's going on in my life, and he talks to me about what's going on in his life. And I don't really have like a really good answer for that. Like, we don't have some kind of big plan for when he gets out. We deal with Free Talk Live together on the phone. We deal with like, you know, our personal lives.
He's not allowed to do Free Talk Live from prison though.
No, no.
No.
Sometimes something breaks and he has to like tell me how to fix it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, look, it's an incredible story. And I think, you know, I wish you good luck and the best, and him too. When you speak to him next, tell him that there's someone else that now knows about that situation, and we'll put this out, and I know it's not going to do anything possibly, but you never know.
You really never know. Like, I think that's probably, to answer your older question, what can people kind of do? Why do not more people not know? And I said, well, they probably wonder what they can do. I think that just spreading the word is basically the best thing people can do.
Well, it worked for Ross.
Yeah.
It absolutely worked for Ross. Mm-hmm. And that was Bitcoin is just, you know, basically getting across to Trump that was a massive deal breaker.
Yeah.
Because if he hadn't have done it, he would have lost the Bitcoin vote anyway, away.
And after he announced that he was going to release Ross Ulbricht, that's when he started taking Bitcoin for his campaign. So that doesn't seem like a coincidence. Mm.
Well, look, hey, let's keep our fingers crossed. In the meantime, sounds like you're on top of things. You're in control, and that looks good. And thanks for letting me use the studio as well. This has been a real joy. I love, I've never been in a studio like this before. I do all my stuff just randomly wherever I can. But this is great. I could really get into being in a studio. It's a nice place to be. And yeah, good luck. And really enjoyed talking to you. Thanks for telling us the story.
Thank you. I enjoyed talking to you too.